It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harbell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's talk legal with Harbell & Collins and Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about special needs trust today, or or supplemental needs trust. Same meaning. That's an interchangeable term.
And just before Wes continues with that, Ben, it's just nice to say, you know, this is a great place to just say there are so many different types of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people will call and say, I need a trust.
Yes, right, right.
And, I mean, I guess that's kind of like, I don't know what that's like saying. You know, I need a shirt to wear. They just trust come in every shape, size, and color, okay? There are many different types of trust. One thing is always is continuous, which is that the trust serves a purpose.
Right, right.
The reason one has a trust is for a particular purpose, but we first must define and discern what the purpose is. And so Wes and I today are going to talk about a very particular kind of trust that serves a very particular purpose. And it's called a supplemental needs trust.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Right. So basically, what we're talking about with regard to a supplemental needs trust is, first of all, a trust is like a vehicle, a document in which you're able to place assets for the benefit of someone else. The person who's placing the assets in the trust is usually called the grantor, and then the person who is in the recipient of those for their use is the beneficiary. And then you name a person, could be a company, but usually a person to act as trustee. And that's the person who oversees those assets in the trust.
And that's basically common to all trust, really.
Yeah, right. That is standard trust nomenclature. But when we're talking about a supplemental needs trust, this is a type of trust that we set up for someone who has special needs. Someone who may have autism, or it could be Down syndrome, or it could be any type of special need, because we want to leave maybe part of our estate to this child, to this person, but we don't want to leave those assets to that child, this person, in their individual name.
Right.
Because if we do that, we don't think, first of all, that this person has the ability to manage those assets. We think that this person may be subject to influence from others, may be taken advantage of. Therefore, we don't want them to have control over the assets.
They may not be competent to handle them.
Correctly. Correct. So when we're talking about a special needs trust, we set the trust up with special language in it so that when we leave the assets into the trust, they are not countable assets at all for government benefits, whether it be SSI, Medicaid, subsidized housing. This is recognized in the law as a special type of vehicle, if it's worded properly, to allow us to leave assets for the benefit of this loved one, this disabled loved one, under the control of a trustee, but they cannot be counted to determine whether this person is or is not eligible for means-tested benefits. Now, these could be benefits that are currently available today, or it could be a new program that's available in 10, 20, 50 years from now. We just don't know. So, anyone out there who is taking care of a special needs child or special needs loved one, my goodness, it is important to consider this, because failure to plan with regard to this, it can really be detrimental to that particular special needs child. We see, how this works, where the rubber hits the road, where the mother and the father are taking care of the child, many cases, they're taking care of this child into the child's 30s or 40s or even 50s. And that is this child's lifeblood. Without the mother and father there's no one there to necessarily take care of the child. Well, the mother and father probably are not going to live forever.
Right.
So,
but we pretty much know that.
But they're not, let me say that one, probably not going to outlive the child. All right. So, but the best thing that we can do is to set up this supplemental needs trust so we know at least we have left an asset properly structured for the benefit of this special needs child and named an appropriate trustee to oversee those assets for the special needs child. So that planning is so very important to put in place.
A couple of questions I think of there is what difference does it make about the age of majority here when the person is underage or when the person is going to receive the benefit?
It makes no difference as it relates to this, but you do at that point in time get into a conversation of guardianship.
Right.
Because in the event that this is a child in under the law, under 18, then in the event we want to put a guardianship in place, then there's not the necessity to show that this person is incompetent. You can have a guardianship for a minor up to age 18, but then when the person turns 18, then that guardianship basically is extinguished, and you would have to then have a guardianship put in place,
right,
where you have to prove incompetency first as the first element. So it's a great question, but really as it relates to a supplemental needs trust, there is no difference there.
Okay. All right.
Ben, some of the fundamental aspects of a supplemental needs trust are the following. First of all, this is an irrevocable trust as to the beneficiary. They are never ever going to be able to receive, if you will, the principal of the trust. So it is for their lifetime that they are going to receive the benefit under the trust, but they're never going to receive the principal or the corpus.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The next provision is that the benefits that flow to the beneficiary through the trust, by the trustee, of course, are things that are actually special in nature. Things that are over and beyond the fundamental needs of the beneficiary, such as housing, food, medical care. It is for those items that are over and beyond the fundamentals of what we all pay for on a daily and weekly and monthly basis.
And they supplement
government
benefits.
Correct.
Right.
Supplemental needs trust.
Right. Okay.
Over and beyond.
They fill in the gap, but they don't put the beneficiary in a place where they can't get the benefits.
Right. They don't count against them.
So it allows the beneficiary to have a fulfilled life, to have not just part of the benefit and then nothing to supplement it. It allows the full benefit and a full supplementation as well.
Okay. All right. We'll have more to come in a moment here. Talking about supplemental needs trusts, if you have a question, you can call in at 800-818-2255 or one of our local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. And we have a caller to come in.
Rick in Newport has a comment.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Great. How are you, sir?
Doing well. What's your comment for Harvell and Collins?
I just want to thank Mr. Collins for all the help he's given me to assistance with a guardianship case that's going on now, and to let everybody know that they really take this stuff personal and they care about their clients. It's nice to have a lawyer that's looking out for somebody's best interest and not just trying to get out of something or get something from somebody.
All right. Well, thank you, Rick.
Give them heads up. I appreciate everything they do.
Thanks, Rick. We're on our way, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much. Good luck.
In this case of a special needs trust, a supplemental trust, what happens? I mean, it's funded at the one who's the grantor. Is that the proper terminology?
The grantor creates the document.
Mm-hmm.
It can be funded, Ben, by really anyone.
Right.
And let's talk about that a minute. That might sound a bit peculiar when I first say it, but a parent could create mm-hmm. this. Or a grandparent could create this.
Right.
And then they could then, through their will, say that upon my death, I want a third of my estate to transfer to the existing supplemental needs trust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is fairly common, by the way,
mm-hmm.
because people with handicapped children are a family, okay?
Right, right.
And there are many times that that someone else in the family will fund in part this trust,
mm-hmm.
okay? I have one just recently where the grandparents live here in Carteret County. Their daughter lives elsewhere with the grandchild that is handicapped.
Mm-hmm.
She set up the supplemental needs trust, the mother
uh-huh,
and the
right,
father,
right.
who live in a whole different state. But these grandparents instructed me in their will that they wanted that daughter's share, to go to the supplemental needs trust that daughter and her husband had created for their child. So they brought me a copy of that supplemental needs trust, which again was created in a different state.
Mm-hmm.
And then in their last will and testament, I was able to pour over, if you will, some of their assets into that trust.
Hmm.
One more thing to talk about, and this is important in all trust, but it's particularly important in a supplemental needs trust, which is, you know, Ben, we've talked to you thus far the last 10-15 minutes about the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
The devil is always in the details, and the details are some of the details that have to be discussed is who is the trustee,
mm-hmm.
and goodness gracious, in this world, we've got to have contingent trustees.
Yes.
Okay?
Right.
And more than one, mm-hmm. Wes and I would advise. I mean, you know, this daughter in this other state was the initial trustee, then maybe her husband. But they are many times a separate and older generation than the beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to line up some good contingent trustees, and you need to then have a formula, if you will, ultimately to set forth to find a trustee.
Mm-hmm.
Another contingency is not pleasant to always have to talk about, but the death of the beneficiary.
Right, right.
We're talking about a handicapped person here.
Mm-hmm.
Their life may not be as long as a normal life in some diagnoses. And as a result of this, it is important that the supplemental needs trust say that upon the death of the primary beneficiary, who
mm-hmm.
is the handicapped person, the disabled
mm-hmm.
person,
right,
that the assets flow as follows. This is critical.
Mm-hmm.
Where are these assets going to go when we no longer have our disabled loved one? So it's got to address that. Because again, see, the trust is, once it's funded, it becomes kind of this irrevocable entity, becomes this holding box, if you will, with these assets, and we've got to then instruct what happens
mm-hmm.
10, 15, 20 years from now.
So like a will, it needs to have testamentary language in it, right?
It does, as to what happens to these assets if this handicapped or disabled person is no longer living. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And now, again, raising a disabled child is often stressful on the family. So what happens in a divorce to if you've established a trust?
Right. Well, if the mother and father have set up the trust and then there's a divorce, I mean, obviously that's part of their estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a divorce, obviously they're going to get back together with their attorney. We're going to talk about maybe two separate attorneys.
Right,
time, you
right.
know, but still talk about you know, how we're going to modify the estate plan, but still the necessity of the special needs, supplemental needs trust is still there. So it probably would not change.
Mm-hmm.
They may make a change individually about what they want to leave to the trust.
Right.
But normally, once you have that trust set up, I mean, obviously the need for this child that they both love is there.
Right.
So once you have that set up in the family, you know, in many cases, that really doesn't need to be changed.
Rick and Nimmerlau is on the line, and we'll talk with you in just a moment, Rick. So hang on through this break here with more with Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, and Rick is on the line from Nimmerlau. Hi, Rick. How are you? Rick, are you there? I think we lost Rick during the break. All right. Now, we ask you to call back, and you can call, and Mandy will take your call.
I'll call 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
Again, talking about supplemental trust.
Yeah, so Cecil was talking about, you know, what happens to the assets held in the trust upon the death of the disabled beneficiary. Mm-hmm. You know, in many cases, what the parents want to happen at that point in time is they want whatever's held in that trust upon the death of this disabled child to then go equally to their other surviving children.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in many cases, the trustee will be one of the other surviving children. I mean, we like keeping that trustee position in the family if we can. Someone, you know, contemporary, close to the same age as the disabled child is a good idea. But keep in mind that this trustee is going to be, you know, the person who's overseeing whatever we leave for the benefit of this disabled child. So, as the trustee, you need to name someone you can trust. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of the way it goes. The other thing that, as it relates to the named beneficiary, in certain circumstances, you do have to pay back Medicaid
mm-hmm.
from the trust if there's Medicaid benefits that have been received. Very limited circumstances, though. In the typical situation where we have mother and father leaving through their will certain assets into a supplemental trust, that's left from mom and dad to the trust. There's mm-hmm. no payback requirement at all there. In the event there's, let's say, a personal injury settlement or judgment from the court for the benefit of mm-hmm. this disabled child, well, you need to, the attorney involved in that needs to make sure that these assets don't pass, the personal injury settlement don't pass directly to the disabled child. We want a court order that,
right.
that says that these go to the trust for him. Those would never have to be repaid. However, if you have assets in the individual name of the disabled child, and we just transfer those into the trust during the life of the disabled child, now that may make those assets a non-countable asset for eligibility purposes,
mm-hmm.
but that particular asset would be something we would have to look at closely as it relates to any reimbursement requirement.
Right.
So, again, you set this up on the front end. You don't fail to do this,
mm-hmm.
leave assets to the disabled child, and then we're scurrying around trying to put a trust together to protect them after the fact. Because if you do that, we're potentially going to get the benefit during the lifetime of the disabled child, of the program, the SSI, the Medicaid, whatever it might be. But there may be a requirement for reimbursement upon the death of that child because of the failure of the mother and father to plan ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, the parents of an adult and disabled child, you know, are themselves getting older. And so does their estate planning affected by this trust as well? I mean, would assets, if they wanted to put assets into that trust, would that affect their eligibility for benefits?
No, it will not affect the parent's eligibility. It, like, you know, let's say for some reason a parent then has to go into a nursing home.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're talking about helping them, assist them in some way with those issues for a parent. But again, it will affect the way in which they are able to fund their child's mm-hmm. supplemental needs trust.
It doesn't make the parents' assets, you know, automatically not countable by putting them in a special needs trust, supplemental needs trust. If, you know, we could take into consideration the possibility of funding the trust and waiting 5 years,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, getting beyond the look back period for Medicaid purposes.
Right.
But normally, that's really not a prudent plan these days.
Not just I know parents that are worried about what's going to happen to their child.
Well, parents who are worried about what's going to happen to their child need to sit down with an attorney who knows what they're doing with regard to this and put together their entire estate plan, you know, so that we know generally what portion of the estate we want to pass to that trust. We have the trust properly drafted. You know, we we've got to look at the big picture in order to put together exactly, you know, what they would need.
Ben, let me just say, this will fit in our last second or two here. Life insurance is a very little handy mechanism in these files. You know, if one of these parents, you know, who are in their 50s, let's say 40s or 50s, and they have now their handicapped child and they're wanting to set forth, you know, a supplemental needs trust to really fund and provide those extras for their child upon their death. One way to do that is for one of the two of them to have a life insurance policy, that then the beneficiary of the life insurance policy is the supplemental needs trust.
Find out more from Harvell and Collins Attorneys of Law. Call them at 252-726-9050. 1107 Bridges Street in Morgan City, online at harvellandcollins.com.